Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You think you understand how this business works, but you don't.
Landman, TV's biggest phenomenon, returns to Paramount Plus. From Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, starring Billy Bob Thornton.
You have to know the rules of the game and bend them. And you really have to know them to break them.
Demi Moore.
I want success. Get it for me.
Andy Garcia, Ali Larter, and Sam Elliott.
You don't even know the game you're playing, do you?
Landman, new season, streaming November 16th, only on Paramount Plus.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Herney joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's Exeter, Rhode Island by Jennifer O'Connor, song about driving around New England. Grizzlies are in Boston tonight, but maybe they can get out of town today. I bet the foliage is nice.
Grizzlies in Boston tonight. Last night they were in New York. What did you think of Ja last night, Chris?
Well, I mean, and he had a bad game. He's been having a lot of bad games lately. He wasn't alone in that. But I think the biggest, it's most glaring because he's supposed to be the best player, and then he's matched up against Jalen Brunson with the opposite end, who's having a great game, and that disparity is stark, as it was in the game Sunday against Oklahoma City and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And I think the number one problem the Grizzlies had last night, not the only one, certainly, but the number one thing was turnovers. Turnovers is the thing that killed them most. And Ja had 8 turnovers. The Grizzlies had 22, so he had some help in the turnover department. But that's 15 turnovers in the last two games for Ja.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but after the game, Michael Wallace was in the locker room, was talking to him, and he said, yeah, you know, I got to be better. Like, he actually sounded reasonably, you know, cheery. I got to be better, whatever. And then he said, you know, some of those turnovers were, I'm paraphrasing, were, you know, whatever. And some were, you know. And it was very clear. He was basically saying, I got slaw playing around me. What do you expect? Like,
That was my interpretation. I got asked that last night. Like, well, what do you think that was about? And I'm sort of weary of, like, let's, you know, pick right. apart and interpret like Ja's, you know, vague quotes like they're like cones from an ancient civilization or something.
Right.
And so, but that was my answer. It was like, you know, he's probably, you know, thinking that some of those turnovers that are on his box score sheet are really, you know, the fault belongs to the recipient, but he doesn't want to say that specifically. That was sort of what my guess is what that meant. Yes.
So do you give him credit?
There was even, and Cam Spencer also was quoted in locker room basically saying, you wonder if it had been a discussion, but Cam Spencer said something about, oh, that was my bad on that play, that Ja turnover, that was me, kind of thing.
Well, it's 100% true. You and I have both noticed it. Like, so, you know, throws whips of beautiful pass to Jock Landale, who, you know, whatever, it might have gone differently if it was someone else. But,
part of that is, like, you know, knowing who you're passing to, and the pass is harder. Like, it's a harder whip across for Cam Spencer than it is for Jalen Wells because right. there's the 4-inch height difference, you know? There's some of that.
Yep.
So it was one that was a little too high, and it was a high and hard pass that was probably catchable for some guys, but Spencer, like, had to jump up and couldn't get his hands on it. There was some of that kind of stuff.
Well, I just wonder. I mean, I don't doubt that it's true, and it must be frustrating for Ja, right? But there's a difference yeah. from it being true and being frustrating and – either saying it or not saying it, depending on what you say. I think he did last night. I think he sort of said it. And then I wonder, you know, it's been part of this is let's, the goal, at least what I've been hoping is that they can put distance between them and last week and the funk, right? And in terms of that, I don't even know how that last night rates, because no, there was no explosion or anything, but it looked like a team that wasn't particularly connected, engaged, whatever. You know, defensively they were woeful. I don't know.
Right.
From that framework, are they emerging from their morass? Was this a game that sunk them back into the morass, or was this a game that helped them emerge?
You had a really bad stretch in the middle of that game. You had pretty good early and late stretches and a really bad middle stretch. You sort of can't have, when you played really good teams, like, you can't have, like Oklahoma City, a good first half and a bad second half. You sort of have to be good for longer. But I do think it's, let's put a pin in that. They just played the Knicks and the Thunder,
right,
who I think are the best team in each conference. I know Knicks are second in the standings, but they're first in point differential, and I think they're the best team. So I think they just played the best team in each conference, and they lost those two games by a total of 27 points, which is not close, but which also is, frankly, not an embarrassing point spread against those teams. I think tonight is a really interesting game at Boston. If you look at the Grizzlies' schedule, like, for the most part, they've beaten the bad teams and lost to the good teams, and then they've sort of lost to the middle teams. There's a couple, like, 500 teams they played they've lost to. So are they a bad team or a mediocre team right now? Like, it may be that they're a bad team. But Boston's sort of in that bad to mediocre range, too, and so this seems like a fair fight tonight.
All right, tell me about Boston.
I think they're 5-7. I think they lost last night. Jaylen Brown is having a really good year. They have two really good players, some other good players, but two really good players in Jaylen Brown and Derek White. Some other good guards, Peyton Pritchard, Anthony Simons off the bench. They have the worst center rotation in the NBA. Their front court is total expansion team level front court. And they're a team that takes a lot of threes, but to this point has not been making them. That's a danger for the Grizzlies. If they jump up and have a 40% three-point shooting night tonight, that's probably – curtains for your Memphis Grizzlies. But this is a team that's, that's sort of muddling along and has injury problems and has issues, just like the Grizzlies do. They're just not as, not as dramatic at the moment. And so it seems like a fair fight. I don't think I had written, like, this would be a good game for Zach Edey to come back. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen, which is too bad. But, this is a game the Grizzlies can win. I'd be really interested to see some of the lineup stuff tonight. I mean, I made the point in my column Monday about Isolo sort of adjusting in game, and last night was really one of those. He pulled the plug on Conchar after 3 minutes. KCP only played 15. Yeah. He leaned more into Cam Spencer, Vince Williams. I'll be interested to see if there's some carryover from that tonight.
Yeah, in terms of good things that happened last night, you wrote about silver linings. I thought Vince was one, right?
Yeah, that's the best game he's had since, his emergence 2 years ago. And he had a couple bad – he had five turnovers. He had a couple bad plays late when they were trying to get back into it. But the total activity he played with, that's sort of his thing. He's the guy – he's not a guy who's going to have 20-point games, but he's a guy who's going to fill up the box score when he's going. And he's going to do lots of stuff that don't show up in the box score. It's the tap-outs and the deflections and the recoveries and some of that kind of stuff. So I think that was a really good game from him. I think he's been – he hasn't been good every game, but he's been pretty consistently impactful. I think he's earned more trust. He's got himself back into the mix. And I'll be interested to see how sort of the rotation evolves over the course of the season, especially after Ty Jerome comes back. Because for the most part, I think Vince and Cam Spencer have both been outplaying Kentavious Caldwell-Pope until the last couple of games, and probably been outplaying Jalen Wells. I think Jalen Wells has bounced back. It's been a very good sign the last two games.
Yeah, that was the other good thing last night. Jalen Wells hit shots. And so some of that was good to see. We did get news on Brandon Clark. What'd you make of that health news?
It didn't seem particularly surprising, I guess. I'm at the point with Brandon Clark where I just think it's all gravy going forward. There's just so much there injury-wise that's compounded over the last few years that I don't think you can make plans with Brandon Clark in mind. I think if he's healthy and he's able to play, great. But to me, that can't be a thing you depend on anymore. I think that's over, depending on that.
Jaren fouled out again after 29 minutes. That's three times this year. I know it's a topic you don't love, but what do you make of Jeremy?
Well, it's contextual. I mean, he fouled out with 1 minute to go in a game that was over.
It was over.
And there's no evidence that he would have played any more. Like, they didn't alter the rotation pattern with him because of the fouls. And so it would be more of an issue if they were trying to play him 35 minutes. But they're not trying to do that. So it sort of hasn't mattered. It's just been a thing people get annoyed by. It hasn't impacted the basketball any.
Right. Because they're only playing him 29 minutes, as it is.
Right.
All right. You've Celtics tonight. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. You have continued your series on the top 25 Grizzlies. Is this number 22? Are we up to 22? Is that what we are?
It's 22.
22 is one of your personal favorites, Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, a guy who, one of the things I note, he is, there are like, I think it was like eight players in franchise history, this includes Vancouver, who are top 10 in the four major categories that it's not scoring, right? Points, rebounds, assists, steals. And one of those is Sharif Abdur-Rahim, and all the rest are basically going to be in the top 10 of this countdown. And so, like, Kyle Anderson, in terms of the totality of his game, just didn't score a lot but did everything else. And obviously, I think stylistically, he was a very interesting player to watch, to think about, to write about. And I think he was very good for the Grizzlies in, like, two of his four seasons. He had some injury issues on the front end that around it with his shoulder that sort of kept it from being as good as it could have been.
One of the things that surprised me was at a time when the Grizzlies played with at a high pace relative to the rest of the league, they didn't slow down when Kyle Anderson slow-mo was on the court.
No, they sped up when he was on the court. They played faster with Kyle Anderson for the most part, and that's because he threw great outlet passes. He got the ball down the floor quickly. If he got a steal or a defensive rebound, he didn't stop to look around. He pushed it. And even if you're slow, if you're quick out of the gate, you know, you can be faster than guys who are more fleet of foot. His mind was fast. His hands were fast. He created the turnovers that sort of got the pace revved up. And so, no, Kyle Anderson sort of embedded that style of play.
All right, you wrote about film, what's happening in Memphis film as well. Let's go to that real quick. Who is Ira Sachs, and what's he got going on?
Ira Sachs is a native Memphian, a graduate of Central High School, I believe, who left Memphis, went to Yale, and sort of settled in New York art world. But as a filmmaker of some note, more on the indie scene, his first two features he came back to Memphis to make, The Delta and then 40 Shades of Blue, which people may remember, won the Jury Award at the Sundance Film Festival the same year that Craig Brewer's Hustle and Flow won the Audience Award. He hasn't made a movie in Memphis since then, but he's made lots of movies since then. They're all lower budget things. He's created an niche for himself. He's able to get his movies financed, and his movies are generally well received, you know, critically. So he's got a new movie out. This is something I think probably would not be screening in Memphis if we're not for his connection. He's always had a close relationship with Malco over the years, and they always make sure his movies show. But this movie is getting good reviews. You know, it's shown in New York, it's shown in LA, places like that. It's basically sort of a New York art world docudrama. It's about this photographer from the 70s and 80s, and then a writer, Peter Hujar and Linda Rosenkrantz. So it's sort of about their relationship.
You mentioned Craig Brewer. He also has a new film coming out, but not yet.
Yeah, December. The trailer rolled out the last couple of weeks. I've actually seen it in theaters a couple of times, so I went ahead and put the trailer in there. Given that I was writing about Ira Sachs and the Sachs Brewer connection, I went ahead and sort of, you know, threw that in there.
What is Song Sung Blue? What is that?
So Song Sung Blue is an adaptation of a documentary from, like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And the documentary is about a Neil Young impersonator or interpreter, tribute artist.
Neil Diamond.
A Neil Young tribute. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Neil Diamond. Different Neil. Very different.
Different Neils.
Neil Diamond tribute artist. I think based in Wisconsin. And about his musical partner, who I think is also his romantic partner, or maybe starts as a music partner and becomes a romantic partner, or vice versa. So it's about this Neil Diamond tribute act. And there was a documentary about them 10, 15 years ago. And this is Craig doing a feature film adaptation of that documentary. And it's Hugh Jackman and Kate Hudson.
Okay, and a couple more just to wrap this up. What's The Running Man?
So The Running Man is an adaptation of an early Stephen King novel. It's actually the second time It's been adapted into a movie. The first version came out in the late 80s, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. This version stars Glenn Powell, and it's like a futuristic dystopian American Gladiator / Hunger Games kind of thing. And it's about some contest where people, you know, compete and to the death or whatever. Another one of those.
And finally, I don't think I've seen any of the Now You See Me, Now You Don't movies. Have you?
Yeah, and I don't really remember them that well. They're sort of cheesy fun. You know, it's Jesse Eisenberg, it's Woody Harrelson, and like, it's like, what if David Copperfield was like a criminal genius who did heists? It's, you know, in addition to doing magic shows in Las Vegas, like did like, you know, big heists or whatever. It's sort of sensationalistic nonsense that might be kind of fun, you know? All right.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Have you, Jeffrey, seen any of those films?
I know for sure I've seen the first one. It was fun, but it's, I think Chris kind of nailed it. It's the type of movie where you had a good time watching it, but by the time it was over, you never thought about it again.
All right.
I think I saw the second one, which was way more forgettable.
All right. We're going to take a break here in a moment, and we will talk to Sam Hardiman on the other side. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Sam Hardiman joins me now. Sam writes about the city for the Daily Memphian. He's also a Pats fan. Pats just rolling. Now are you willing to concede that they're an actual contender and not just this is a fun little emergent season we're having?
No, I'm not ready yet.
Are they the Commanders of this season? This year's Commanders? Last year of the Commanders made it to the conference championship game when no one expected it because of a dynamic quarterback emerging, new coaching staff, new players around that young quarterback.
Yeah, I think in CJ Stroud the year before that, right? Like there's a track record here of new emerging quarterback, easy, very soft schedule. Obviously, like the win against Tampa is a different kind of win. Yep. It's on the road. It's against a good team. It felt good.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You think you understand how this business works, but you don't.
Landman, TV's biggest phenomenon, returns to Paramount Plus. From Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, starring Billy Bob Thornton.
You have to know the rules of the game and bend them. And you really have to know them to break them.
Demi Moore.
I want success. Get it for me.
Andy Garcia, Ali Larter, and Sam Elliott.
You don't even know the game you're playing, do you?
Landman, new season, streaming November 16th, only on Paramount Plus.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
At the same time, Tampa had opportunities to win that game, and the Falcons game was also a game the Patriots very well could have lost. So I'm very happy. You know, this is kind of like the guy who hits, you know, a good shot in golf and then is like upset that it's like, you know, 15 feet from the hole instead of 5. So I'm just going to shut up.
Jeffrey, what do you think? I mean, so they hire Mike Vrabel. Everyone, I think, acknowledges that Mike Vrabel is a good coach and was a good coach in Nashville, right?
Yes.
He's not an offensive wizard.
No, but Josh McDaniels is.
Right, and they have the perfect – let me ask you this. Josh McDaniel is the perfect offensive coordinator because he's perceived to be an offensive coordinator that can never get another coaching.
It's actually a great setup.
Is Brian Daboll that next?
Maybe. I mean, I do think the question is, what is Brian Daboll away from Josh Allen?
Well, that's the other thing. Josh McDaniel has a better record with quarterbacks than we know that he's a whisperer. We don't know that Daboll. What are your thoughts, Sam?
It's a great question. I hope we get another opportunity for Brian Daboll with another quarterback so we can test it. He obviously did really well in his early years in New York. And then, again, this is another situation of like, yeah, Brian Daboll didn't do a great job in New York, but you lose Malik Nabers early in the season here, right? There's just not a lot of talent. You know, Jackson Dart's good, great find. Not a lot of talent on the rest of the roster, except, you know, the defensive line.
All right, to the city. You had a really interesting couple of pieces yesterday. Yesterday or Monday?
Monday.
Monday. About what's going to happen after the task force leaves. Let me ask the threshold question. Do we know when they're going to leave? And when they leave, are they leaving? Who's leaving? Like I saw Bill Gibbons' comment was, I sure hope the Tennessee State Troopers remain here for the long haul because they've been very helpful. Do we have any sense of how long this is going to last and what part of it's going to last how long?
Yeah, so in an interview last week, Memphis Mayor Paul Young said to me that he thinks we're in the middle. You know, we've heard from other you know, avenues that it could be the end of the year that the whole task force uproots, right, and leaves. But genuinely, if anyone wants to tell me, let me know. That'd be great. I think the public would like to know. So that's first. Then obviously to your question, Jeff, you know, the Tennessee Highway Patrol, well, we're still in Tennessee. You know, it's very clear that, you know, there is a craving, at least among some, for a heavier presence of Tennessee Highway Patrol people. And that's been a craving for a very long time, to be quite honest with you. And now Memphis is sort of finally getting it as part of this task force. So there is maybe no reason for the Highway Patrol's presence to diminish besides, you know, manpower issues. And so, yeah, I think I've answered your question there.
Interesting, because one of the things you've written about, and you mentioned again, and it came up in this piece again, is that before the quote unquote task force arrived, there was already progress, significant progress in bringing crime numbers down in Memphis. And that wasn't just because Memphis was doing a better job, although there was some of that. It was also because they were already getting more help. Is that not true?
Yeah, two things can be true here. There was already significant help, and there has been help for a long time from federal law enforcement for Memphis. It's just maybe not has been as followed, and everyone hasn't been as locked in on it. But for a long time, there's been FBI presence, DEA presence in this community. They were definitely working hard this summer. Also, crime was just falling in this city, and I think it had fallen nationwide. Memphis seems to kind of lag the nation a little bit, but also does mirror national trends. We can get a little more into that in a minute, but yeah, what's happened with crime in Memphis, Tennessee is Memphis was already having a good year for crime. It's going to have low homicide numbers, low aggravated assault numbers compared to recent years, particularly compared to 2023, which was a modern record. And then the task force arrives, and it's turning what would have been a good year probably into a great crime year by Memphis standards, right? By many other community standards, it'd be horrible. But by Memphis standards, it's going to probably be a great crime year. And so the piece, you know, asks the question of, well, how sustainable is that? And what is going to drive down crime here in the long term? And I think that's really the question the piece asks, and something like it's going to be really interesting to watch.
Well, one of the really jarring things to me was you had two pieces. One, sort of a narrative piece where you talked to people and wove all this together. But then you also had another piece where you just quoted significant Memphians on the. This is what they had to say, and I don't know. There were 15 or whatever. There were a bunch of them. It was so unbelievably jarring, maybe depressingly so for me, to see such an incredible disparity in what people had to say. Because you have half the people saying this has been a just devastating blow to the community. It has been something that has created distrust among populations of the city toward police, and that we're going to be paying for that for a long time, that it's created a hollowing out, all of that, that it's simply, you know, jamming our jails full. We have people dying in jails. It feels like every week now. You've got that portrait painted by some. And then you have the other portrait about, my God, this has been such a boon. Memphis is finally safe. It has needed this. This is going to be a lasting piece. It's going to have a dramatic. As you're writing this down, I'm sure it had to strike you that same way.
Yeah, I didn't maybe have such a visceral reaction that you did. And maybe it's because maybe sometimes I,
you expect it. Of course, you expect.
Maybe that's right. Maybe it's just more of, I think some of the folks who thought that this was great, and I'm not trying to poo-poo them, okay, or poo-poo anyone. I'm really grateful that for everyone that participated in that story and was willing to engage with us, engage with the Daily Memphian and trust us with their words. Is I think that there are a couple lenses that people look at this from. There is the really community informed lens of like Memphis neighborhoods that aren't the Poplar Corridor, okay, that are majority people of color, that have higher poverty rates than the Poplar Corridor. And then there are folks who maybe live in the suburbs, maybe live in the Poplar Corridor. And I think those were some of the folks who were really like, oh, this is awesome, this is great, et cetera. And I think that was something that I wasn't that surprised by. But I think two things can be true here, right? And I think the duality of this can be true of the crime rate stats can be excellent. And they certainly look excellent by modern Memphis standards. Like Memphis may be under 200 homicides in 2025, which hasn't happened in a long time. I don't know off the top of my head, but I don't think they've been under 200 homicides since in the 7 years I've lived in Memphis, Tennessee. And that can be really good. At the same time, the aggressive policing that we've seen, and this is documented in the affidavits that are being filed by these law enforcement agencies. This isn't me making it up. It's not activists spinning a narrative. This is what you're seeing in actual sworn documents from law enforcement. The aggressive policing we're seeing, the heavy immigration enforcement that you wrote about this week, Jeff, right? That has real impacts on people. It really does shape the psyche of communities. It can sow fear, right? If people are being pulled over aggressively or being misidentified because people are looking for, because law enforcement's looking for other people on warrants, and they pull over the wrong person and they're aggressive about it, that can really harm somebody.
What's the percentage? What was the percentage of what's the number that of the arrests or whatever that have been made that have been basically immigration enforcement administrative?
Yeah, this is from my colleague Aaron Fleming's reporting, and he, you know, and this was as of I think last Saturday, but it's about 17%, so almost 1 in 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, the tragedy of this, and this is me editorializing, and so you don't have to or can't, but the tragedy of this is you could have had, maybe folks would argue this, but it seems to me that you could have had the beneficial impact of chasing the really bad guys without the other stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that you needed the other stuff in order to chase the bad guys. In fact, one of the things that Mayor Young talks about in your piece is that he's been really orienting them or hoping. It was interesting because I think the way you put it is they don't have power to tell the task force what to do. They can advise, suggest, hope, wish, whatever else. They want them going after known gang members, outstanding warrants. That's what they want them focused on. Because that seems like the kind of thing that if they do that effectively could have an impact even after the task force leaves.
Absolutely, right? And so the mayor's words I thought were really interesting. Like, you know, he essentially talked about the scope. When the scope shifts from not looking for gangbangers and pulling them over, I'm paraphrasing there here, that's when he starts to get worried. And so, yeah, there's an opportunity cost. If the task force is spending a lot of time pulling over and maybe trying to detain nonviolent immigrants who happen to enter this country, you know, illegally, that takes away potentially from their man hours and their ability to then go hunt for or build cases on some of the really dangerous people in this community that police will tell you, you know, that homicides, you know, really you know, beyond domestics, right? Beyond domestic violence, homicides, and, you know, kind of petty disputes that boil over. Sometimes, you know, a very small amount of people are, and you can see this with like the Young Dolph case, or are accused of or are alleged of being responsible for a lot of bodies that hit the streets in Memphis, Tennessee. And that's what the mayor and the police department would really like people to help focus on, because they would love some of these resources to make a big dent in those organized crime people. And that would be huge for the city. And
in the end, that's somewhat a difference of priorities, right? Like if your priorities are actually fixing crime in Memphis, that is where you would spend the vast majority of your energies and time. If your priorities are also just getting the numbers up for ICE, then you would spend your time and energies otherwise. And
and
that seems to me to be part of the problem here. I did. You talked to a woman from the Brookings Institute, I believe, about crime and about what percentage of it. I mean, in the end, like we those of us who live in the Poplar Corridor notice the crimes when crime spills over, which it has too much, let's be honest. But her point was most of this crime is actually happening in places. I forgot what the number was, where the poverty rate is above 30% or something like that. What was the essence of what she was saying?
Yes. So the number in please, everyone go Google this, you know, when we get off, or ChatGPT, whatever you want to do, however you search these days, do this when I get off, or do it right now. But Brookings has data for almost all the major cities in the United States. And it's about the relation between concentrated poverty and gun crime. And so between 2019 and 2023, according to Brookings, 71% of Memphis's homicides occurred in zip codes where the poverty rate is 30% or greater. Okay? And so that means in some of the most desperate, poor places in the city, that is where most of the gun crime is occurring. Okay? And obviously, it has spilled over into the public order. There are very notable instances of this. But most of the gun crime is in poor Memphis neighborhoods. And you can see this in MPD's own data. MPD has a great dashboard they put up by zip code. And I was playing around with it yesterday because this really got us going at the Daily Memphian, to be quite honest. And I was looking at it yesterday, and there are some zip codes, you know, off the top of my head, for example, 38120, which is the easternmost Poplar Corridor zip code. I'll ask Jeffrey this trivia question. In the past 5 years, how many homicides have occurred in the easternmost Poplar Corridor zip code?
Past five years.
Read the zip code one more time.
38120.
38120.
So that's where? That's
homicides?
That's pretty much like Oak. Yeah. That's Oak Hall, Ridgeway.
Yeah, this is by MUS kind of. Yeah, okay. Ooh, boy. And the last 2 years, was that the?
Five. 5 years.
I'm going to say like five total.
You're wrong. One.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and then there are literally zip codes, for example, in Fraser, Raleigh, you know, those two zip codes this year, I think between them, there are about 40 homicides already. Right. And so, and these are places with higher poverty rates. In South Memphis, you know, 38106, the poverty rate is super high.
Well, and that's why obviously, you know, and a lot of people said this is that seems obvious, is we need help and programs and an emphasis on and helping these communities in ways other than just jailing the people like who commit crimes. We need less poverty. We need more hope and we need less poverty. It is interesting because one of the things I hear people say occasionally is that, listen, every dollar that is being spent on this could be spent instead on creating hope and progress and lifting people out of poverty. And that is theoretically true. It is not at all true, though. Like, I mean, let's be honest. This administration, I don't know who was, quote unquote, paying for the task force. Maybe that's another question for you. That money, given the priorities of the people who are deploying that money, was never going to be sent on Boys and Girls Clubs. Like, it just wasn't. You know what I mean? Maybe it should in some global way. It's about where our priorities are. But it's priorities of the city of Memphis versus the current administration.
Right. I mean, who is paying for the task force? The National Guard, federal government's paying for it. The task force beyond Tennessee Highway Patrol, federal government's paying for it. It's coming out of the budgets, the overtime of those respective agencies, right? And so, yeah, those are law enforcement agencies. They don't really have, in most cases, have programs to give money to communities in terms of grants for Boys and Girls Clubs. That's not what, you know, the Department of Homeland Security is set up to do, right? That's not what the FBI is set up to do. And so, yeah, in theory, if we are in, you know, working all together and everyone's like, what is best for Memphis? And we all get in a room and do that. Absolutely. That in theory, you could spend that money, but that's not how this is. And certainly the Trump administration has not indicated that that's something they want to do. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, I think, like, again, you can have aggressive law enforcement, and then there's really an onus on local philanthropy and local government to find the money to do the things that will change the outcomes in these neighborhoods, right? And it's going to be incumbent on local government to be creative with this stuff and to find that money. And at the same time, I'll point this out. We've talked a lot about, you know, arenas and other stuff on this program for me and some of my reporting. A lot, if you look at the city budget, there's a lot less money that kind of goes towards, you know, things that could interrupt the cycle of violence in poor neighborhoods versus what is going towards stadiums, what goes to golf courses, which I enjoy, and what goes to the Memphis Police Department. There are priorities there, and the city's going to have to find money to change those outcomes.
Well, speaking of, I don't think you're the one who's writing about this, but I've seen there's been news. What's happened with the hotel across from the convention center?
Yeah, the hotel, the city has finally now closed on the Sheraton, which again, to make clear to people, when the city borrows money, they are not taking money from their current budget. They borrowed money to close on the Sheraton, and then hopefully it gets renovated. When they take that money, they're not borrowing from this year's budget. What they're doing is they're borrowing from future year's budgets. They're essentially reducing the amount of money they will have for general operating expenses in future years by adding to what they have to pay in debt in those future years. So what they did when they bought the Sheraton was not take from 2025 or 2024's budget, but really, you know, budgets throughout the 2030s and 40s.
So someone asked me, and the obvious question, which is maybe you could, what would the city say to this, is that, listen, if this was a good business decision to own and renovate this hotel, a hotel company would be doing it. The mere fact that it's fallen to the city to do it suggests it's a stupid thing to do. What's the response to that?
Yeah, I don't want to speak for the city too much here. Right. I think the city's arguments. The argument would be that, and this is the argument that I'm going to, and again, this is about borrowing. This is about what the city has already incurred in terms of on the taxpayer tab. And the reason the city is doing this is it needs to make sure the Renaissance Convention Center, which is still paying more than $200 million in debt on the renovations, the Renaissance Convention Center. And hey, it looks a heck of a lot better when I first drove over the bridge, when I first came to Memphis and said, what a dump that thing looks like. And when it was just a concrete slab, it looks better. But the city's, you know, they renovated, they spent a ton of money, they used a ton of debt capacity that could have gone to FedEx Forum, could have gone to other things. Okay. And so now, because they've incurred that expense, they feel the need, and this is what the mayor said in multiple venues, they feel the need to now bail out the Sheraton and to renovate the Sheraton. And so that's why the city essentially was pot committed already. And so it's anting up and adding more to that, you know, essentially tourism debt. And so that's why that's happened.
Really good stuff earlier this week. Folks can go read it. A couple of pieces there. Continuing coverage of all of this over at the Daily Memphian. Thanks so much, Sam.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah. Bye.
Sam Hardiman. And I didn't talk about this yesterday because, despite what people say, this segment isn't a stick to sports segment because it's Sam who covers the city, and Fishman isn't a stick to sports segment. But I'd say 80%. What do I stick to sports, Jeffrey? Burgers and sports, you know, 80%.
Yeah. Dogs.
Dogs, yeah, whatever. So I didn't mention the column that I wrote yesterday, but yesterday I did a Q&A with Mauricio Calvo, who's head of Latino Memphis, and it was interesting. And I wrote about it. He had a couple things. The one thing is he pointed out that in a city, even if you don't give a damn about the Latino population in Memphis as humans, Memphis isn't growing. Certainly the white population isn't growing. It's receding. The black population isn't growing. He said the only populations that are actually growing are Asian and Latino. And if you are A, deporting, and then B, terrifying this population such that they say, the hell with it, I'm leaving, it really has an impact on Memphis. If you drive over to Summer Avenue or lots of places in Memphis, what you see is this is a part of our community that's actually kind of vibrant. You know, businesses being open.
Improving, like making buildings nicer.
Making buildings nicer. And if no one, I don't think, would argue. Listen, I won't argue that the previous administration was way too lax on immigration. I think that's true. And I think it's also true that you have to get bad guys of any type, wherever they're from. You have to go get the bad guys. And so if they are people here who are undocumented and are bad guys, then you should get them out of here. The problem that I think is raised is, as Mauricio was telling me about a friend who is undocumented. So he is here illegally. He's undocumented. He does landscaping. He's been here 20 years. And he's got four kids, all of who were born in the United States. One of them is actually named Elvis. Is there much to be said for pulling that guy off the street and sending him back to wherever? Like, what's the no? Like, I think that's where some of us part ways. I don't see the point in terrorizing that person. The person pays taxes. The person has a job. The person has four kids who were born in the United States. I don't really see the point of that. And so that was one of the interesting, in all of this. And again, people can agree. It's funny. That column now has like 100 comments, and it's just people arguing back and forth amongst themselves. I do think in most things there actually is a middle ground. If we listen to it and seek it out, and the middle ground is, of course we should have secure borders. Of course we have to be selective about who comes into the country and on what circumstance, et cetera. And of course we have to get the worst of the worst. But people who've been here, embedded here for 15, 20 years, who have families, like, is that really should be a priority? That would be my argument. No, it should not be. And honestly, I'm just kind of on principle against masked men in the street. That's the other thing. If you have to be hiding behind a mask, that doesn't feel very American to me. All right. Thanks to Sam. You can read his pieces over at the Daily Memphian. If you are selling your house, Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams Realty, I've said it before, but it's true. Josh has the buyers.com is the website. Phone number is 901-461-8147. And it's a tricky time to sell your house. And if you're selling your house, the really tricky part is you don't know how much it's going to sell for, and you don't know when it's going to sell. So it makes it awfully hard to move on. And that's why the cash offer that Josh has, the market, full market price cash offer, simplifies it. Because you know when it's going to sell. He'll give you up to 4 months to go, and you know how much you're going to get. And so you can make plans for your future, whether it's moving in town, whether it's moving out of town, wherever you are moving. And when Josh comes to give you to look at your house, he will let you know. There's some houses that are like, you know what? I think if we sell this one the traditional way, we can get even more money. But he will level with you and let you know the best way to market your home. It's Josh Heisa. Josh has the buyers.com, 901-461-8147. To take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkinshaw, 92.9 FM ESPN. Well, that's rude, Jeffrey.
It just snuck up on us, right?
I had so much to say. We didn't even discuss we mentioned glancingly the college football rankings. Anything stick out at you?
I wish.
You're mad that Texas Tech jumped ahead on
this? I'm not that.
Enraged? Yeah, that's what happens.
I think Utah, somehow, I guess the committee only watches Utah when they play at night at home.
Does George get a haircut? George, you look good, man.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You think you understand how this business works, but you don't.
Landman, TV's biggest phenomenon, returns to Paramount Plus. From Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, starring Billy Bob Thornton.
You have to know the rules of the game and bend them. And you really have to know them to break them.
Demi Moore.
I want success. Get it for me.
Andy Garcia, Ali Larter, and Sam Elliott.
You don't even know the game you're playing, do you?
Landman, new season, streaming November 16th, only on Paramount Plus.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts. And
tightens it up.
Tightened it up, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's ready for the playoffs.
Playoff push.
All right, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Coach Hurd will join their program, as will Brooks Monahan. Jason Munns will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company, as will Lawrence Dockery during hour number two. Cobb with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
That's a good thing. You know, bringing in at this time of trouble, Brooks Monahan. That's the answer. That's the answer. I'll be listening, and we'll be back tomorrow for an hour. Work is done.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You think you understand how this business works, but you don't.
Landman, TV's biggest phenomenon, returns to Paramount Plus. From Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone, starring Billy Bob Thornton.
You have to know the rules of the game and bend them, and you really have to know them to break them.
Demi Moore.
I want success. Get it for me.
Andy Garcia, Ali Larter, and Sam Elliott.
You don't even know the game you're playing, do you?
Landman, new season, streaming November 16th, only on Paramount Plus.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.